Ed Balls.
Mr. Speaker, first on a note of consensus, as today is Holocaust Memorial Day, and following our conversation last night concerning the cross-party commission report today, on which I'm proud to serve, can the Chancellor confirm there is cross-party agreement to fund the Commission's recommendations alongside ongoing funding for the vital work of the Holocaust Educational Trust for the rest of the decade, so that we can have a new and permanent memorial so that future generations will never forget that terrible atrocity? And then, turning to today's GDP figures, Mr. Speaker, can I ask the Chancellor, is he, like me, concerned that economic growth is slowing? And with just 100 days to go until the election, will working people be better off than they were when he became Chancellor, or will they be worse off?
Well, first of all, can I say that as this is the 70th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, we should remember the inhumanity that happened there and the suffering of those who died and who live with the memories of the Holocaust, and vow as a nation to keep its memories alive. I know the Right Honourable Gentleman and members from other political parties served on the Holocaust Commission. The chair of that commission, Mick Davis, briefed the Cabinet today on their proposals for a permanent memorial and an education learning centre. I made clear at that Cabinet meeting that the Government will provide £50 million to support this brilliant plan, and of course we will go on funding the work of the Holocaust Educational Trust, which takes Members of Parliament and many, many school children to Auschwitz to see for themselves the horror that happened there. I think across the House we can come together to commemorate this day, but also to make sure that it is never forgotten what happened in the Holocaust and we never repeat its mistakes. If I know it's a, if the Speaker will allow me to have a slight change of tone for a couple of seconds, just to say, for the Shadow Chancellor to complain about the GDP numbers, what the GDP numbers show is that Britain has had the fastest growing major economy in the world in 2014. He kept telling me to listen to the IMF. Well, the head of the IMF said few countries are driving growth like America and the UK, where growth is improving, the deficit has been reduced, unemployment is coming down. The President of the United States says we must be doing something right. And when he complained about the fact the Prime Minister went for dinner at the White House, he said, I haven't been neglected. They invited me in and gave me coffee and biscuits. That's about the only endorsement he's going to get for his economic plan anywhere in the world.
It's good that we have cross-party agreement to fully fund the Holocaust Commission's report. And on the economy, if things were really going fine and the economy is fixed, people would be better off and they're worse off, and he'd have balanced the books as he promised, which he's completely failed to do. It's because, Mr. Speaker, of that failure on the deficit. He's now planning spending cuts, which the IFS in the next Parliament say are colossal, and the OBR say will take us back to levels in our economy not seen since the 1930s, before the NHS existed. Let me ask the Chancellor. Every developed country with spending as low as he's now aiming for has widespread charges for healthcare. Isn't that the real Tory economic plan?
We have a free at the point of use National Health Service, which we are proud of and we will continue to fund. And what is clear is the total confusion in Labour's health policy today. This morning, the Labour leader said he was going to use his so-called mansion tax to pay down the deficit. 6 days ago, the Shadow Chancellor said that money would be used to pay for his NHS plan. It is total confusion today. The only way to have a strong National Health Service is to have a strong economy. And let me end on this note. We read in the last couple of days that the Shadow Chancellor has been sidelined from the general election. We read that in a major humiliation, party bosses have quietly shunted him out of the media spotlight. So let me reach across the dispatch box, offer the hand of friendship. Let us resolve we are both going to put him at the centre of this general election campaign.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, by sticking to our long-term economic plan, huge strides have been made towards reducing the deficit, something which seems to evade the Shadow Chancellor. Does my Right Honourable Friend agree with me that there's only one party that can be trusted to take the difficult decisions needed for prosperity in this country and to have sound public finances, and it's the one that he and I represent. Yeah.
Well, my honourable friend is absolutely right. And, of course, in Lincolnshire and across the country, people have seen unemployment fall. They've seen businesses grow. We've got to stick with the long-term economic plan, particularly at a time when the global economic risks are increasing. But by working through that plan, we can deliver that economic security for his constituents and mine and make sure this country has a brighter economic future.
Jim Cunningham.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Is the Chancellor aware that of the 150,000 people employed in Coventry, 50,000 of them are part-time jobs, low-paid jobs, mainly women and young people? What are they going to do about it?
Well, of course, we want to get unemployment down further. And for those who want full-time work, we want to make sure that full-time work is available. But I would point out, in his constituency, youth unemployment is down by 73% over this Parliament. Unemployment is down by more than a half. So we've got to go on with our long-term plan that is delivering those jobs in Coventry. By the way, 80% of the jobs created in the UK at the moment are full-time. So we need to sustain that plan, not go back to the chaos we saw under the government he supported.
John Barron. I suggest to the Chancellor that he should heed no criticism from the party opposite about deficits when they more than doubled the national debt when in power, last in power. But can I raise the issue? Can I raise the issue of small businesses? As we've heard, the government has done much to help small businesses, which is why unemployment is falling across the country and in my constituency. As the country's finances continue to improve, will he look to further ease the tax burden on our small businesses, particularly corporation tax, who are very often the backbone of our local economy?
Well, my friend, honourable friend, is right that small businesses are absolutely central to our country's economic growth and job creation in the future. We have actually cut small companies' corporation tax in this Parliament. From April, we'll have a single corporation tax, as it's all consolidated around 20%, which removes a lot of the bureaucracy. On top of that, we've taken the smallest businesses out of business rates. The employment allowance has helped with the national insurance bills of small businesses. Of course, I will bear in mind anything else we can do to help small businesses. We've got some measures in the pipeline, but there's clearly more to do.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This government demonising those on benefits while doing little about tax evasion and avoidance, which, as we have heard, has risen significantly under their watch. So today sees the launch of the tax dodging bill campaign, as 85% of British adults say tax avoidance by large companies is morally wrong, even when it is legal. So why won't the Chancellor impose penalties for breaches of the general anti-avoidance rule, as we have called for?
Well, first of all, it was this government that got the base erosion profit shifting process running with the OECD, looking to deal with the international rules. It was this government that announced at the autumn statement that we're bringing in a diverted profits tax to deal with some of the contrived and artificial behaviours that people are worried about. It was this government that introduced the general anti-abuse rule, and it's this government that's consulting on bringing penalties for the general anti-abuse rule. It's not a bad record, I have to say.
Mr. David Ruffley.
Can I commend the Chancellor's aim of running an overall budget surplus in 2019-20 and cutting the national debt so that next generation aren't saddled with punitive taxes? Would the Chancellor of the Exchequer agree with me that this is a case of simple fairness, not ideology?
Well, my honourable friend is absolutely right. Countries like Canada and Sweden, two countries actually with quite strong social democratic traditions, do have forms of balanced budget rules or rules where they run surpluses in good times. That's enabled them to bring their public finances under control, their debt down. They didn't endure the kind of hardship that we saw as a result of the financial crisis here in the UK. So we are proposing that the country should run a surplus in good times. That is the only sustainable way to get our national debt down. If you don't do that, you leave Britain exposed to whatever economic shocks the world throws at us.
The Chancellor will be aware of the importance and the success of Newcastle International Airport and the need for successful businesses to plan ahead. So you'll understand the threat that it feels when there's a possible cut in air passenger duty north of the border. Will the Chancellor give an assurance now to the business of Newcastle International Airport and potential businesses that they're going to go out to that we will match any cut in funding north of the border?
Well, the Honourable Gentleman raises a very serious point, and I think there is agreement here across the political divide. The devolution of air passenger duty to Scotland raises the potential for a real pressure on particularly airports in the northeast of England, but also Manchester Airport, which is partly in my constituency. And, of course, we have to see those powers devolved, which they will be. We'll have to see what the Scottish Parliament does with those powers. But he has my assurance that we will work together to make sure that the impact is minimised on the northeast, if that turns out to be the case, and that we will protect regional airports in England. I think this is something we've got a couple of years to work this out. It's not something that has to be done tonight or tomorrow, but we can work out a plan that protects the brilliant Newcastle Airport and Manchester Airport and other regional airports.
Mulholland.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This Treasury stream abolished Labour's unjustifiable and unfair beer duty escalator and also delivered two historic successive cuts in beer duty. But we still pay more tax on our beer, so our British brewers are still not getting a fair deal compared to their European counterparts. Are they going to make it a hat-trick?
Well, my honourable friend has been a champion of the beer industry, his pubs, small pubs and small brewers across the country during his time in Parliament, and a very effective champion he's been too on that front. Of course I can't make any commitments at this stage about the budget, but I welcome his recognition of the progress that we've made on this subject during the course of this Parliament, and certainly will take his recommendations for the budget very seriously.
Britain has an enormous and persistent trade deficit with the European Union, clear evidence of a misaligned exchange rate. The significant weakening of the euro in recent days will make the position even worse and cause damage to British industry. When is the Government and the Bank of England going to take seriously the need to achieve and sustain an appropriate sterling-euro exchange rate?
Well, this government does not target a particular exchange rate, and successive previous governments found to their cost that that was a very difficult and damaging thing to do. What we do is make sure that Britain is competitive, and I think the best thing to do to support exports is to make sure our British businesses are taxed in a competitive way, they have great skilled workforces working for them. Well, they're chuntering on the front bench. I seem to remember the Labour leader, when asked recently when would Britain join the euro, he said, it depends how long I'm the Labour leader. So it's still official Labour policy to join the euro, tie their currency up to the eurozone, and all the ensuing chaos that would follow.
Well, Henry Bellingham.
Is the Chancellor aware that since 2010, unemployment among constituents is down by a staggering 1,000? What assessment has he made of the role of small business start-ups in reducing unemployment?
Well, the small business start-ups have been absolutely central to job creation. We've helped them with the employment allowance and the enterprise investment scheme. We've done things like the new enterprise allowance that we've given to young unemployed people to start businesses has been a great success. So we've got lots of initiatives in place to back our brilliant small businesses in Norfolk and across the country.
Richie.
Considering the economic modelling that was carried out by one of the Treasury's own economists, Professor Blake, what further progress has been made towards reducing VAT on tourism, which would benefit all of the regions, particularly coastal regions in the UK?
Well, what I would say to the honourable member is that this is a matter that we have looked at, but there is a significant cost in terms of making any changes here. But in terms of a point about helping tourism and so on, as one should be aware of the substantial increase in tourism in Northern Ireland and other places over recent years. And secondly, the Coastal Communities Fund provides a lot of support to many of the areas that benefit from tourism.
Nigel Evans.
Mr. Speaker, cutting beer taxes, increasing the thresholds before people pay income tax, and stopping the proposed tax increases on petrol, which were proposed by the Labour government, the last Labour government, has helped the Evans household budget and probably a number of other household budgets throughout the Ribble Valley. At the next budget, will the Chancellor please keep calm and carry on cutting taxes?
Yeah.
Well, I won't make any commitments about the budget, but he is right that the support we've given to the pub industry, the support we've given to motorists, have both been huge boosts to those industries and to families in Lancashire and across the rest of the country. Of course, we don't encourage people to mix the two.
Last but not least, very pithily, Alison McGovern.
Will the Chancellor confirm that he has ruled out a further VAT increase in the next Parliament?
Well, our plans do not involve a VAT increase because we are prepared to take the difficult decisions on public expenditure, including the welfare budget. And she and her colleagues voted for £30 billion of consolidation. If they're not prepared to do that by achieving expenditure savings, they must be contemplating big tax rises. With 100 days to the election, we know the choice: a competent Conservative plan that's delivering growth or a return to economic chaos under the Labour Party.
Order! My apologies to colleagues whom I wasn't able to accommodate, but as usual at Treasury, questions demand massively outstripped supply.